Hey there, you're listening to Virago Pod, a podcast that is dedicated to empowering and improving the physical and mental health of female athletes everywhere.
This podcast is brought to you by The Virago Project, a nonprofit organization that helps female athletes balance sports with life.
I'm your host, Emily McGee Zaslowski.
And I'm your co-host, Taylor Tracy. Let's jump right into the episode.
Hi, Virago Warriors, and welcome back to episode 32 of Virago Pod. On today's episode, we are super fortunate to have Ariel Wilson joining us. Ariel played at Penn State Volleyball when they won four consecutive national championships, went on to play professionally in Europe, and is now recruiting coordinator at Georgia Tech University. Earlier this month, I went to one of my teammates' weddings, and shout out Tia, and I got to catch up with my old coach at UNC, and I guess also shout out to Joe Segula. He has been a head coach at UNC for 30 years and obviously has an extremely successful career, and that was actually right after we recorded this episode, and I learned so much because we got talking about how much the game has changed over the years and even in just the last 10 years since I was in college. Some of these changes have been really big, including recruiting and how transfers work, so I'm really excited Ariel could provide some insight on her experiences as both a player and now as a coach, not only on how things have changed on the coaching scene with this kind of new era of coaches we see coming up, but also how some things change, like just like social media and how that's impacted what recruiting has looked like as well. Okay, so for announcements, we are wrapping up season one of our podcast. And before we get started today, I just wanted to say a big, big thank you to all of our guests and listeners and donors for your support. After this podcast, we have just two more episodes. One is going to be with the former UNC sport dietitians and one with an OBGYN on a topic that definitely doesn't get enough attention in women athletics. Also, a small little note on this episode, Ariel talks obviously in future tense about June 2nd, and that's because this podcast was recorded in late May, which means Georgia Tech athletes, along with many other fall sport athletes, are on campuses right now. So we'd like to wish good luck to Georgia Tech, Ariel, and all other collegiate sport athletes who are reporting to campus for hopefully a bit more normal of a season this fall. All right, that is it, and let's bring on Ariel. All right, I have got Ariel Wilson on the line, and I'm really excited to hear from a former player, current coach. I think that's always such a cool perspective to see both sides of the coin. So thank you so much for agreeing to come on today and have this conversation.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, so to start, can you tell us a little bit about your playing career and why you ultimately decided to become a coach after that?
I grew up in Chicago, Maywood to be exact, and I guess throughout that experience, I went to Proviso East High School, which is very known for football and basketball. And so I was kind of the starter of volleyball coming out of my high school, meaning just playing club volleyball, getting Division I coaches to come to my high school for volleyball, and then ultimately them like retiring my jersey out of high school. The other part of it was kind of being highly recruited out of club ball and making my decision to go to Penn State, which was clearly the best decision I could have made coming out of high school. Went to Penn State, had a great career there, was a three-time All-American for Penn State and also a four-time national champion. And I had a blast. Like, I thought that each experience of winning was very different. I thought that the people that I was around were highly motivated, highly talented Gatorade Challenge winners of their high schools, of their, you know, state. And I thought that we were just very driven people that really came together when it really counted. After that, I had the opportunity to go play professional for five seasons, played in Poland, played in Azerbaijan for 2 years, played in Italy for 2 years, and had a little short stint, a short season in Indonesia. I thought all of those experiences were great. They were all very different, definitely gave me perspective. And I'm the only child. My dad has three daughters as well. And so for me, it was just kind of one of those things where you just up and go and not look back. So all of those experiences have definitely played a role in kind of why I decided to get into coaching. I love high level volleyball. I love high level things. And so for me, it's very important to kind of give back to the sport. It's just a blessing for me to kind of motivate young women to be their best and do their best. And the thing about Georgia Tech is we create like everyday champions. So for instance, in the classroom, they're very high level, very driven individuals. And outside of the classroom, we've been in the situation where we've won championships at Georgia Tech. And so now it's just time for us to continue to do that and push the program forward.
Obviously, I myself am biased as I went to UNC, but I pretty quickly narrowed my own search to the ACC because I did love the balance of that high level athletics and academics. So I played Georgia Tech, obviously, like two times every year. And your gym is a hard one to play in. Like that little community and your fans are crazy. Yes. So I was there when I remember Monique Mead was there. And she was my, I call her my right side hitter because I was an outside hitter. So we were always, you know, matched up against each other. Phenomenal team. And I still follow the ACC a lot. And, you know, Georgia Tech's doing great things. So thanks so much for coming on and kind of sharing this because, I mean, obviously two elite tier programs that you've been a part of long-term. So thank you so much for kind of coming and sharing some insight because I think a lot of people will be really interested to hear how that is.
Yeah, thank you.
So, and my next question then, I guess, is going to be kind of, we can start from the coach's side, but also like you can see what you were surprised that you didn't, maybe didn't experience as a player, because I'm going to assume maybe your recruiting experience was pretty different than norm since you were so sought after. Maybe you didn't have to be, again, this is me just making assumptions based on your accolades, that maybe you didn't have to be as aggressive or like that people more came to you with your skill level. So as a recruiting coordinator now at Georgia Tech, what are something that athletes that are going through the recruiting process should know? Like either former you wish you would have known it as an athlete or like for your friends or players that you are currently recruiting?
Yeah. So I guess just a little bit of background. So again, I told you I was the only child from my mother. And so her putting me in club gave me a lot of exposure, but being highly recruited was tough. You know, everybody sending you all of these letters, you know, you're getting all of these kind of exposure and it's just overwhelming, you know, and you can't necessarily answer everybody or, you know, you decide, you know, where you want to go, top programs, things like that. And now I think that it has been a little tougher on kids because of so much exposure and social media. I think if we had that, because, you know, before it was only, hey, a phone call or a piece of mail or whatever the case was, and then you went on your official visit. So there wasn't a whole lot of exposure on, you know, the best teams or whatever the case is. And so I remember getting a letter from Georgia Tech and did I open it? Not one time, right? But the idea behind it is I should have been more proactive and being like, hey, thanks, but I'm not interested. You know what I mean? So that coach can continue to move forward. The other thing is, if you are interested, definitely make it known, you know, send an email, send a video, answering questionnaires, coming to camp, I think is super important. And I think, you know, you're already being seen, you're already being sought after. So that's nothing like crazy that's different. But I think the biggest thing is just being having good communication moving forward.
Yeah, I think for me, camps were a really big deal. That's where I not only could I kind of, I don't want to say like put my money where my mouth was, but like camps, you can only go to a certain number of camps in a school in a year. So if I went to that camp, it was a very good indicator that like, yeah, like, cause even at UNC, like when I went my first time, I was like not one of their top prospects. And it obviously like once they can see you more and interact. So I remember too, like you said, I was mailing DVDs back then. Like it was like such a different time of like watching me play. And so, it was just so different. And I almost had the different opposite experience as you that I responded to everyone. Cause I was like, who knows if this coach is going to go somewhere else. And it was exhausting. And I did though the same way. Didn't always tell coaches because I was like, who knows what could happen? Like, I don't, and it just wasted so much time and energy that made the recruiting process not fun for me. Like, it was miserable. So many times I almost just recruited to the first places that offered me just because I was like, I physically can't keep this up. So I think there's like going to be a balance somewhere between leading all these coaches on versus like, you should, like, you can still do a little research and, you know, respond. So I think that's a really good. And my question, based on what you said about, especially in the age of social media, that's so different. I think a lot of questions that athletes, or not just questions, but a lot of times you see in the news of these high school students, especially now with the age of TikTok, like losing college offers, doing all this stuff. But then also, like, when I was at UNC, there was like a time that like, it was super lockdown. Like, we were not allowed to post things like us in a swimsuit, us like, just a bunch of different, like, even like, I think our Twitters all got shut down for one season because they're like, we gotta figure out a way to monitor this. And until we have this in place, like, I think there was some weird stuff happening with the NCAA on Combo, probably at UNC, there were some scandals. And so how do you find, I guess, So the social media aspect, I'm sure there's a lot of good things about recruiting, that you get to know these players more. They get to know you as a program. They get to keep updates. They don't have to be Googling, researching stats on games. So I guess what are your opinions on social media? And do you think the good outweighs the bad for recruiting and even your athletes?
Again, time management. I think you can spend all day looking at social media, and I'm really getting this false perception of like a lot. Like, I don't know, like sometimes in a picture is worth a thousand words, but really it's not, it's just a picture, you know, like there's no other thing behind it. And with me kind of growing our social media and kind of having some hand in social media, I think the biggest thing that I've learned is that branding is everything. I think what you put out is what you're ultimately selling your program as, and then also targeting your audience, right? So you're going to definitely, a lot of programs add their, you know, top players or, you know, top recruits or recruits even, and just try to figure out what they like, what they don't like, what you should be posting more, what you shouldn't be posting. And so I think it just makes it that much more time consuming, but also it kind of just, you're able to kind of peel a layer of the onion that you maybe wouldn't have seen if we didn't have social media. It's also really good for student athletes. Like, you know, right now, had I had that branding back in the day, like we probably, you and me both would probably be superstars on social media. So I think it's a really nice thing to have them market themselves. You know, this is something that they're going to have forever in life. And what you put up is super important. Like you said, bathing suit pictures, all that good stuff. I mean, if you look at my social media, I have a hard time showing a lot of skin, and I'm a coach, you know what I mean? And I try to kind of keep that stuff PG, but I also like to have fun. So I understand the gist of it. I think that it's a great way to market yourself, sell yourself, for coaches to see who you are as a person, and so forth. So it does matter what you put on your social media. And I think it also matters what other schools are putting on their social medias in order for them to attract, you know, the best players in the country.
Yeah, I think, especially with all the changes that are coming with name, image, likeness, that's in the thing, like the possibilities for athletes, like, I mean, your follower, like, I mean, we didn't, Instagram, I think, was there my senior year of college or something. But yeah, like we didn't even have like a Facebook page for our, like, well, we made our own Facebook pages to send invites for like event invites to our friends, to like
alumni.
And now they have like, you know, the whole marketing team on it. So it's crazy how much that stuff has changed and theoretically could be a lot better, especially for women athletes where they do right now have the theoretical possibility to play professional in Europe. But there's not many other, revenue stream. So it's really cool that this is even possibly an option for them.
Exactly.
When they're there.
So and now, you know, they have that league in America too, which is nice.
Yes. Athletes Unlimited. We actually talked to a few people from that and I followed it. I watched a bunch of it was awesome.
So awesome.
And it got picked up for a season two. And we got softball, I think, starting here in a few weeks. So it's really exciting. So we always like to plug them to like, I think they have like lacrosse, hockey might be coming, I've heard. But yeah, we got to keep watching these domestic sports because the more opportunities we can have here is going to be awesome.
For sure.
So I think actually the social media conversation kind of is a nice segue to the like new era of coaching topic that we wanted to talk to today, because that is one of the examples of how you as a coaching staff are now having to accommodate all this new technology and new ways of doing things. And in my experience, watching not just women's sports, but watching these basketball coaches, you know, I had Roy Williams at UNC for however many years, but also that's how it was at UNC volleyball. There was coaches that have been there for 10 plus years, was kind of the face of the program, have been there forever. And also some new coaches where a lot of times they're either assistants or just these new head coaches that have just started in the few years where they're usually former players or have different experience. So what has been your experience in this, I guess, quote unquote, new era of coaching, and what are the pros and cons of the different types of coaching that you found?
Where do I start? I mean, I've gotten recruited by the best coaches in the world, right? Russ Rhodes at Penn State, the GOAT. I'm biased, of course. the UNC coach, even. I mean, the GOAT, he's been there for such a long time. Michigan State, Kathy George.
Yes.
I mean, the list goes on. So I would say what was weird for me to see some of these coaches at these top programs step down just recently, or, you know, retire, whatever the case is. And what's been cool is to be in a mix of some of those up and coming coaches that can really leave a mark, you know. And what's nice about kind of our era, like Kristen Kelsey, one of my good friends, Alyssa DiRico, an old former teammate, roommate at Penn State, but now at Dayton as the associate head, you know. Sierra Jones at Howard, you know, Shonda, like all of these at South Carolina, I should say. It's just all of these up and coming coaches are doing really well for themselves. And what's nice is that we have the best of both worlds. We've been taught the old school way, but we also understand the new school way as well. And so we can adapt in those situations. I think what is also nice is that we're always evolving and learning and trying to figure out kind of where we want to leave our mark in the world, you know, as young coaches. I think you're right at saying that we start off as assistants and then eventually most of us decide to go, you know, and become a head coach. And what's nice is you still have those veterans in the game that still can kind of give you the pros and cons, you know, about what you should be doing, what you shouldn't be doing, how has things evolved for them. And I think what's hard is that when you get older, you start to kind of miss out on some of those trends or not care as much. And that's no discredit. It just is what it is. Like when you're a head coach, you have so many other things that you need to be worried about, you know? And so that's when you bring in fresh blood and new people, new faces, so that you can kind of get your program, you know, A1 status, you know? So I guess for me, it's been a really, really cool thing to see how it's evolved, how us young coaches are trying to be successful in our own way and trying to find our own story to tell, you know? But other than that, I guess, what was the other part of your question?
Yeah, I mean, that was basically it. Can you tell me more about the differences and and you went into it, the big pros and cons, not saying that either style's bad, right? Like you said, someone's newer, but someone also has a new outlook. So yeah, no, that's perfect.
I guess just to add on to that, it would be, I kind of touched on it, but we can help them kind of continue to be present social media wise, you know, having them take over, doing different things, exposing kind of your program, the pros and cons about your program, and then they can help us just figure out what's right and what's wrong, you know, what you shouldn't be doing as a young coach or what you can be doing better. And they just have experience. So for us young coaches, we don't know what we don't know until we're, you know, evolving and experiencing those things. And so I think what I've learned the most is just that every day is a new challenge, you know, you with this social media thing or just trying to be relevant with your team, even trying to be relatable, things like that. I think that's what us young coaches do best. And I think as far as the older ones, I think Russ does a really good job of staying in touch with his alumni, sending out letters to his alumni, sending out media guides. I don't even know if that's a thing still. But just staying connected, calling people on their birthdays, you know, just being relevant and really showing them that them being a part of their program was everything for them.
That's a really good point, because there is, like you said, sometimes like maybe Georgia Tech will be your forever home, but it's also possible with assistant coaches. There seems to be a lot more switching around when mm-hmm. you're trying to find your home and advancement opportunities, because in a nice way, like, I don't expect Joe Segula to leave care. Like, if you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he is there. Like, if I wanted to, like, and I will say too, and I've heard that at Penn State, that a lot of these head coaches that have been here for a while, they mm-hmm. really do trust their assistant coaches and allow mm-hmm. them to flourish. They're not the one mm-hmm. monopolizing time at mm-hmm. games. They're not like control freaks that have to have every last word. They do really trust their team, and they have this mm-hmm. sense of like, if you're here, like, I picked you and I trust you, and like, you can really delegate and speak, and I like mm-hmm. I trust you to go off and like on game day. It's not like you're just the one sitting on the bench taking stats. You can really have an impact. So I think a lot of cool things are happening with these mm-hmm. two types of classes are really colliding for the best.
It's the best. For sure. I agree.
And especially too, like you said, like there's things like, I know my coach staying in touch because he's there longer, like compliance factors that like, new coaches mm-hmm. learn all that. And even like other relationships with other coaches that they have mm-hmm. and like knowing their coaching style, it's like a little game up on recruiting and knowing how those coaches play. So yeah, I think there's definitely, mm-hmm. But then again, Coach Segula has a pretty good swing, but he's more of a box hitter. He's not the one, like my assistant coach was actually setting for like the recruiting team. We'd have our other assistant coach be like the opposite, like the hitter we were trying to scout and stuff. So that's not really typically their role. So I think there's like definitely a bounce. A bounce was great for at UNC. I know it was kind of similar at Penn State. I agree. Okay. So since I have you, I kind of already asked it through the recruiting lens, but what are some things that you have now realized as a coach that as a player, you wish you would have known about coaches? Like you're like anything you would have like given them more slack on, more intel on?
That is a really great question. I was the most... naive player there was. My volleyball IQ was not high. I just play the game, right? And so all of the time and dedication that our coaches put into just making you a better person overall, I think goes uncredited. I think a lot of what we do is to make sure that you're setting a great example for these women to come out of your program better people. And when that's not always credited, and not that you need it because you're doing it out of your heart and this is your purpose, I think sometimes it's nice to know that they understand where you're coming from and that the commitment that you're putting in to investing in their lives also makes your heart happy at the end of the day. I don't think I ever wasted time to say, hey, thank you. Thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for being a positive influence in my life. And so that just didn't go unnoticed for me. The other thing I would say is there's a lot of, administration stuff that goes into this. Like it's trying to manage young lives. It's trying to manage people in your program. And sometimes I think the loyalty of having the right people in your program is tough, right? You have to have the right pieces. You can't have people backstabbing. You can't have people thinking they know better. You can't have people undermining what you're really working toward. You know what I mean? And all that stuff matters at the end of the day when you're trying to build your program and build a successful powerhouse, you know? So that's another thing is like making sure that as a player, you're coming in every day working really hard. You're coming in every day grateful because you're here for a reason, you know? And then the other thing is just making sure you put in the work, you know? Like, not only are your coaches putting in the work, but you also as a player have to take some control over putting in the work so that you come out on top and it's not anybody else's fault that you weren't the same as your first year or, you know, I don't know, didn't get the awards that you wanted. You know what I mean? Like, I think sometimes that part of everything gets lost because the players don't see the bigger picture. They don't know how much time, like I said, goes into putting each piece together, recruiting the best people, getting the best staff, the medical people, staff, they do a good job of trying to make sure everybody's healthy. The strength coach does a good job of trying to make sure, you know, everybody's healthy. And so I think that just making sure that you say thank you and are grateful every single day.
Yeah, I think that's a good reminder, because a lot of times athletes feel like, and I know this, I think it happens on all teams regardless, athletes a lot of times mm-hmm. feel like sometimes when the coaches are hard on them, it's because they just view them as a baseball card, that a spot on the lineup, like a piece to that. And they don't really always, it's hard to remember that your coaches are people too. And like, you can't just assume that your coach is viewing you as a statistic. They're viewing you as someone who cares about you and knows your potential and is really genuinely trying to help you be the best version of yourself, not just for the team, which they do ultimately. Like, I'd be lying if a coach was trying to say, oh, I only care about you as a person, not the team, but they actually do care. Like, it's not something that's coming from a place of selfishness. Like, you get, and this is, I guess, part two to what you were saying. Back in high school, I was like, oh, I could be a coach. Like, it was pretty chill. She had three kids, my high school coach. She was awesome, badass. We won a lot of games, and she only had to practice like after school from like 3 to 7 PM. And I'm like, that is really good work-life balance. Like, you can do your stuff during the day, you practice weekends. Okay. But like, that is not what being a college coach is. Like, there is so many hours that go in when those kids aren't in practice that I never realized. Like, when I, like, even when I was a player, like, I knew they were in the office for like, but I just pictured it was like office hours, you know, when they're just like chilling there. It's like, no. How much, like, not until I graduated, my friends are coaches now. And I'm like, oh, you are traveling all the time. Yeah. You are working weird hours, responding to things. Like, I never realized genuinely how much work and time goes into being a collegiate coach. It's absolutely crazy. And some of them are volunteer assistants too, that like aren't even getting, it's like, these people are not in it for the win losses. They are in it because they love it. They love shaping these lives. So I think that's like hard for people to remember sometimes too.
Yeah. And I would say the other thing is be able to communicate with your coaches. I think with the whole social media era and instant gratification, things like that, like, remember that all of this stuff takes time. You know, the amount of time you're putting into everything that you need or want to do, I think it takes longer than just a month or, you know, a week, a day. It's like one of those grind things that has to keep going and be instilled in you so that you can get to where you want to go. Just like us coaches, some of the things that we're doing is trying to continue the program for 3 to 4 or 5 years, you know what I mean? Like, in advance. And so you really have to just stay patient and understand that, like, it's not always going to be about you. Like, there's a bigger picture and a bigger purpose. And then the other thing is just, like I said, again, staying grateful, like making sure you're present every single day.
Yeah. Cause I think similar to how, like, you were highly recruited, there's a good chance in your program, everyone there was recruited. Everyone there was winning their high school MVP. They were all captain. They were all winning all tournament at their club. And so that's what people don't really realize. It is going to be like the best of the best. And just because you're not playing as a freshman when you thought you were. I think that's a good thing to remember, that like, everyone has your background. And that's hard to like think, because you know how much work you put in personally, but like everyone's put in that work. It's like, what are you going to do now that you get to college? I think that's a good reminder. So I have had a lot of friends that found out, and I had a basketball coach that I asked a similar question to, and I thought her answer was interesting. So I want to ask you too. So I've had a lot of coaches, former players, get into coaching. And it felt like it was almost because they felt like that was the next step, and they ended up not liking it at all and quitting after like one or two seasons. So how did you make the decision to like, okay, I think college coaching is for me? And do you have any tips for anyone who's like, any current players or anyone who's like thinking about getting into coaching now? Do you have any advice or warnings that you think people should notice, like, if it'll be a good fit, if that makes sense?
I think one, being honest with yourself about what it is you want out of your experiences. I think if you understand that you're a very introverted person, maybe certain aspects of the job are not going to be for you. So for instance, as a recruiting coordinator, and that's specific to any position you want to take, right? As a recruiting coordinator, you're going to be the first contact for recruits. You're going to be reaching out to recruits, reaching out to coaches, you know, trying to build those relationships. And I think if you're not into that, if you don't want to spend time on the phone, if you don't want to spend time on the road, it's not the position for you, right? If you're more of a behind the scenes type of person, you like to do the technical side of the game, for instance, watching video, like scouting, all that good stuff, maybe that's more of something that you would be interested in. Or if you don't like any of that, right, you don't want to have anything to do with coaching, anything to do with hands-on recruiting, you can be a director of ops, right? You can do the team travel, the picking up the food for the girls, you know, being that extra person, support person that does all the behind the scenes stuff. So I think you really have to be honest with yourself and what is it that you want to do and what is it that you want to get out of this experience. The other thing that I would say is if you are a selfless person, if you're someone who, I don't know, just enjoys like helping young women or, you know, being a part of their lives in a positive light, I think this is a perfect job. Like you get to have fun with them every single day, try to figure out what you can do to help them be better people. And just make sure that, you know, it's not always serious. Like you gotta have fun. You gotta be able to keep up with the times of social media, do a TikTok dance and look crazy, look silly. You know what I mean? Like, I think part of it comes with the territory of being a coach. I don't know that I find any cons. I think that in this new age, we're doing a really good job of having families, getting married, starting, you know, being able to do the best of everything when you're a female coach. I think what's nice is you can always grow and get better. So if this is something that you feel like you don't know that you'll be long-term in, it's good for now. I think that's the best thing you can do is just try it. And then if you don't like it, move on. You know what I mean? I think there's endless possibilities in this field. And what's nice about it is that you get to continue to be innovative as a person. You get to continue to grow. You get to continue to experience different places. Maybe you get into international travel for recruiting and things like that. But you're exposed to a lot of things that could help you along the way, whether you like it or not. I mean, even us being athletes, how many times did we, you know, find that whatever we did athletically is now great in the world and that somebody was looking for that or whatever the case is. So I think with coaching, you don't have to be a lifer in it, and that's okay. I think for me, even I don't know that I want to be a head coach, but I love being an assistant. You know, I love having just the opportunity to have that direct contact with our student athletes and be the person that's silly or be the person that's, you know, hey, we got to get serious, you know, or whatever the case is. But I hope that answered your question.
Oh yeah. No, I love how you brought up if you want to help young women too, because that reminded me of a point that you brought up earlier too, about like seeing them more. Like that was actually one thing I wish I would have done a little differently in college. And I always had in club, like, we had one coach for 1 year. We move on to the next. I never really had a relationship. I had a very respectful relationship with these coaches, very mm-hmm. transactional almost. Like mm-hmm. I have a question. They knew the answer. Thank you. Like we talk mm-hmm. strategy. And like, I mean, they would know our personal, like, you know, they would know our like boyfriend that would come sit on the stands, but like very surface level. And mm-hmm. I always thought it was very weird that I felt like some of my teammates were like friends with the coaches. Mm-hmm. But looking back, it wasn't that they were friends. They just had a more open line of communication and they would text them or visit their office when something wasn't mm-hmm. wrong. Mm-hmm. So I think that's like also important for people listening is that like and kind of what you alluded to earlier too, it's like, if you have relationship with your coaches, like that's not like a bad thing. And that's not a transactional thing. And like, odds are that the coaches are open to hearing more about than just like, hey, why is my swing off this past week yeah. type thing. So I think that's a good point too, that like people are getting into it for more than that. And it's a good thing to remember, like if that's, and I think that's a lot of people's main reason for getting into especially women's sports coaching is like the role models they can be in helping women's sports.
Yes.
I also liked how you commented on all the different opportunities, and luckily they've grown a lot in the last 10 years, like director of operations. I was like And it doesn't hurt to ask. I was director of operations for UNC volleyball during my, like, I took a victory lap fifth year, but I just did video highlighting. I picked like good clips. They really liked it because they were like, oh, you know what's like highlight worthy. You know what should be on the little intro video. You know what should be on like the after game video and stuff. So it was like really nice. Like, I never would have known that was an opportunity if like, but my coach was really nice and said, like, what are you interested in? What would you like to learn? So I think, like, not just like you said, pigeonholing, if you don't like one aspect, there still could be a position open for you. So I think that's really good as well.
For sure.
Okay. So that is all the questions I had for you. Just because we do have a lot of high school athletes listening, can you give a little intel on what summers look like for your athletes at Georgia Tech?
So as far as just like what our athletes are doing, they get a month off, technically, and then like every big powerhouse, they're working out June 1st. They're coming back. They do second summer session where everybody is back. And then in between those times, they have internships should they want to, you know, learn more in their profession or get paid during the summer and things like that. So right and as of now, they're on vacation with their parents or, you know, at home or working their internships. And then come June 1st, majority of them voluntarily come back and just make sure that they're staying in shape, you know, getting together with their teammates. Because as coaches, we can't work with them until August, about August, what, like 8th or 9th or so. So with that being said, they have all the time they need with our strength trainers. And in our program, we lift every day. So if they aren't lifting, they're doing it on their own time. They're not checking in with us because clearly we can't do that. But as an athlete, you're just trying to figure out how you get better coming back for the fall season. Because preseason, as you know, is only 2 weeks. And so then you jump into like the big trainings and then also team dynamic stuff. And so in the spring, individual workouts are more prominent, but this spring was a little different with COVID. We actually had a season, we had the NCAA tournament, all that good stuff. And so if you're coming off a season like that, you're really trying to stay focused on trying to get back to how you finished off.
Yeah, I think, and I think that's pretty standard approach for a lot of teams. And I was wondering if a lot of your athletes did summer school, because I really actually really like doing summer school then.
Yeah, me too.
When you're traveling and stuff in fall, like I was a very good student. I was a double major, but it was really hard for me to take my math and econ classes, like when I might be missing Fridays. So I always took my like hard classes actually over the summer. Cause like,
exactly.
I didn't do well when it was just a midterm and final for these hard math classes. But when I have homework every day, actually I'm like, all right, cool. Like give me those little brownie participation points. And I really liked, the buy-in that all my teammates had who stayed over the summer, it was like, it was much more chill, but it was still fun. It felt like the workouts were like a little on your own vibe.
Exactly.
Yeah. I really liked the summer. But I had no clue that I would be there every summer.
I was there.
It was my choice, but I was glad I did it. I just didn't realize everyone did it. So that is all I had. Did you have any last words you either wanted to tell? I'll leave it up to you. Collegiate athletes, athletes who are going through recruiting, retired athletes, any message you want to send as your final farewell takeaway?
Thank you for having me. Like I said, I think this is, you did really well on the questions. I really kind of, really was very interested in this interview. I saw a few of my friends doing it and I was just like, wow, that would be cool to have this experience. So thank you again. And then the other thing I was going to say, just to end note, is that nothing in life is worth having that's easy, right? So you really just want to make sure that you're always putting in the work and that you're continuing to grind it out, even when you feel like it's the toughest ever. I wish that there was a formula that somebody could give us all that says, hey, this is what life is supposed to be. But really, it's different for each person. And when you are feeling those lows, just remember that like you're human and that if you ever have, you know, those situations for too long, reach out to somebody. There's always somebody that's willing to help you get out of those situations or give you perspective even, you know, because everybody's going to have to live their life the way that they want to. But if you know somebody that's experienced, there's always something that they can give you that might help you out of those situations. And then even when you're high, like, sometimes it's lonely at the top. And so really just remember, again, balance is everything, and reaching out to people, even in those situations, can help you as well.
I love that, because I think it's, unfortunately, it's like easy to think like, I had a very successful career at UNC, but I was like miserable at times. And like, I was like, this is not normal. I'm playing, but I'm miserable. And I feel like, should I quit volleyball? Do I need a transfer? I think it has to be a little more normalized. And I didn't know I was so not alone in feeling that. Like, I thought I was the only one who felt that way. And not until I got back with some of my friends over Christmas break, they were like, yeah, no, freshman year is awful. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, again, I'm not saying that'll be everyone's experience, but like, it was nice to know that everyone is sometimes miserable being a student athlete. Everyone is sometimes miserable in their career field. And not that, like you said, if it's extended, if it's something that doesn't feel necessarily temporary, even if it is something that's short, I still encourage talking to someone, because like, there's no harm in it. But like, you should have an outlet, and it's okay. It's not like something's wrong with you if you go and like talk to someone, or reach out, or have like a trusted family member that you like open up to about all this stuff. Because you'll be surprised. It's actually much more the norm to feel it's not easy, right? It's not easy. And that's much more than a norm of just an easy life where you're coasting. This highlight stream that you see on people's Instagram. So I think that's a really, really, really powerful takeaway, that like, just because we talk about like some of our highlights doesn't mean that that was always easy for us as well.
Yeah, it was tough. It was, I mean, I remember calling home crying a lot of times, you know, and it just is what it is. Like, nobody could have pictured that for me, right? But I think part of it is like, you have to embrace the good times, and the bad times are not going to last always. You know, there's always a solution or something else you can be doing to get yourself out of it. Don't stay stuck there, you know. And I know that's easier said than done, but there's always somebody you can reach out to that's going through the same thing. And now with social media and all of this stuff being so in your face, like, there's something even on social media that might can help you out of a situation, you know. And not everything on social media is true, but everybody's going through their own journeys, and it's important to know that you're not alone in your journey.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I love when we can get like current, because like, a lot of us are just former athletes, former coaches and stuff. So I love when we can get current coaches to come and talk about their experiences. And like I said to Kristen as well, it just helps when we can kind of normalize coaches too, if that makes sense. And show like, okay, no, these people are people. Hopefully you shouldn't be afraid to email them. Don't be afraid to call them. They want you to succeed. So thank you so much for coming on and having this conversation with us today.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, we'll be in touch. I'll follow Georgia Tech. Just tag us whenever you guys do stuff. We'll repost it. But thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, talk to you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.